This week on Making Contact.
There's this common saying we're hearing again and again these days that water is the oil of the 21st century. First of all, I'd want to say I hate that saying because you can live without oil and you can't live without water.
1 billion people lack access to safe drinking water, and at least 31 countries are now facing water scarcity. Those are some of the problems that corporate ministers and government officials converged on Istanbul to talk about last March. But did they? On this edition, we'll hear from organizers who are working for the right to water on a global level. They tell us about the failures of private water management and alternatives to corporate control. I'm Tina Rubio, and this is Making Contact, a program connecting people, vital ideas, and important information. The World Water Forum, held in Istanbul this past March, touts their gathering as the world's biggest water event. Some 30,000 business professionals and government officials representing every continent were there. In their words, they gathered to raise the importance of water on the political agenda and formulate proposals towards solving key water issues. But they convened behind closed doors, and they were met with resistance by international activists. Producer Pauline Bartoloni profiles one U.S.-based activist who helped organize an alternative gathering, the People's Water Forum.
When Jeff Conant told Making Contact he'd be at the Turkish port city of Istanbul during the World Water Forum in March, we insisted he carry a recorder and bring back some voices from the ground, including his own.
Opening morning of the Water Forum. I've just taken a ferry across from the registration site.
On the first day of the forum, Conant walked off a ferry to witness a crowd of chanting demonstrators in front of the forum building.
There is a demonstration of several dozen Turkish activists in the street outside. They've been blocked from getting to the entrance of the forum by a force of riot police, certainly greater than the number of activists that are out here.
Conant planned to report on the week's activities. But his main role was to help organize a People's Water Forum, a day-long event of networking and speeches for some 600 international anti-water privatization activists. Conant's been working on water issues for almost 15 years. Now, he works for Food and Water Watch, a nonprofit consumer organization. He seems to know people wherever he is, even in Turkey.
And I'm going to talk to some of the people that are here.
The police is putting on their gas masks, and it's, I don't know what happens now.
He's also not afraid of tense situations, even of being shot by policemen in foreign countries.
The police have opened fire. Everybody's running. I'm running. We don't know if they're firing wooden bullets, rubber bullets.
Conant managed to get out of the riot in front of the water forum scot-free that day, but only after a miner spilled to the ground when he tripped over a journalist's microphone cable. It was a rough start to a long week of counter-demonstrations to the forum.
The problem isn't a big meeting about water. In fact, many of us believe that the United Nations should be hosting such a meeting.
After he got back from the forum, I sat Jeff Conant down in our studio. I wanted to find out why activists would fly around the world to dodge bullets in protest of what he describes as a sort of trade show for the water industry.
It's very emotional in the sense that there's a tremendous hypocrisy going on. Water needs to be treated as a public good and as a human right and as a commons. And these corporations are treating it as a merchandise to be bought and sold. And that fundamentally excludes people, specifically the people with least access to money are not coincidentally the people with least access to water.
Conant says the cost of registration of the main forum, up to 300 euros or close to 400 US dollars for residents of developing nations, was enough to exclude civil society. He advocated a different model of planning the management of water resources.
The way to do it is to bring together public servants, water managers, community-based organizations, women's organizations, indigenous-led organizations, and build on the resources that already exist in terms of managing water in ways that are democratic, transparent, equitable, and accountable to the people who are being served. So the solutions to the world water crisis are not necessarily technological solutions. They're more likely social solutions. You know, we talk about scarcity of water. We're also talking about a scarcity of justice.
Since the early 90s, Conant says, international financial institutions have promoted the privatization of water systems around the globe. This has often meant an increase in water prices, but not necessarily an improvement in quality and access. Conant and others advocate for the use of the term the right to water into the ministerial declaration that came out of the forum.
Part of the struggle about the human right to water is to be able to have a mechanism to hold corporations accountable. It's not only to obligate states to provide access to water, it is to provide a mechanism that prevents corporations from trampling over people's rights, over communities' rights, and to make it clear in international law that water needs to be treated in a responsible manner.
A main contested issue at the forum, among ministers and the protesters alike, was the change of the language in the main ministerial declaration from the human right to water to the basic need for water. Conant was in a car with Maud Barlow that week, the senior advisor on water to the UN General Assembly, and asked for her thoughts.
This apparently subtle difference between a human right to water and the basic need for water. Maud, can you tell me anything about why this is so significant?
Well, because if it's just a need, that it can be delivered by the private or the public sector. But if it's a right, really, you can't sell, trade, or deny a right to somebody because they cannot pay. So it's not a semantic thing, although the folks at the World Water Forum would tell you it is, but it's not. It's a very important and crucial difference.
Conant and Barlow are not the only ones who want rights-based solutions to the water crisis. After the removal of the term water rights in the Water Forum's declaration, about two dozen nations, led by the Venezuelan and Bolivian ministries, signed an alternative declaration for the right to water. Others called for the United Nations to take over the next forum, planned for 3 years from now. Conant says it's likely that the next forum will be different.
I mean, one thing that we say that we're consciously recognizing during the week in Istanbul is that the World Water Forum itself is just a distraction. It's not the main issue. It's a place and a platform and in some sense a target. But more than anything, it serves as a moment in time for our movements to come together and to build the energy necessary to put water back into the hands of the people.
For Making Contact, I'm Pauline Bartolone.
During the People's Water Forum in Istanbul in March of 2009, activists from all over the world gathered to talk about alternatives to corporate-controlled water systems. We bring you some of their voices. Margarita Lopez, president of the Union of Public Service Workers in Colombia.
Las deficiencias de agua potable en Colombia son una muestra real.
The deficiencies in our water system in Colombia are a clear demonstration of the deficiencies of the Colombian state. It's a responsibility that the government is transferring to private entities.
44 millones de habitantes. Más de 10 millones de colombianos no tienen acceso al agua potable.
Colombia is a country of 44 million inhabitants. More than 10 million Colombians do not have access to potable water. What's public is public for all. The government must guarantee the basic water for everyone in our country.
El derecho humano al agua. De las últimas empresas creadas de agua potable en los años 2007 y 2008,
privatization and commodification of water are things which violate basic human rights to water. Of the last 16 firms created to provide water, 11 of them are private, practically 73%. This shows that our country, with neoliberal policies, is pursuing a strategy of the privatization of water.
ha venido interviniendo a través de la Superintendencia de Servicios Públicos lo único que queda, lo público que queda en el agua.
Our government has been trying to impact the management of the Superintendency of Water, which is the only public instance agency of water left in the country.
Se ha intervenido las empresas para demostrar que no son viables. Lo que exige de este encuentro, compañeras y compañeros, un pronunciamiento real.
What we need from this forum is a real declaration, a real pronouncement around 3 points. The privatization of water in Colombia, the human rights violations of unionists, and the process of a referendum for water in Colombia continues.
Your solidaridad, compañeras y compañeros, sobre estos tres enfoques. No se puede congelar este.
Your solidarity is paramount on these 3 points. We can't freeze these initiatives. The human right to water, what we're going through and pushing forward in Colombia, must go forward. The privatization of water we see is working against the social development and the ecological protection of the country. Please support us now or never.
Apóyennos, compañeros. Es ahora o nunca.
Marianne Manahan, a research associate at the Philippines Office of Focus on the Global South, spoke at the People's Water Forum about water privatization issues in Asia.
I would like to start by saying that Asia's water resources are described as a paradox. One of abundance, we are home to tremendous water resources, great river systems and lakes in Tibet, India, Southeast Asia, and China, but at the same time, of scarcity. We have the highest number of people unserved by either water supply or sanitation. There are 715 million people in Asia who have no access to safe drinking water, while more than 1.9 billion, or close to 50% of its population, has no access to sanitation. This scarcity has provoked water wars in communities and interstate conflicts between China, the Mekong region, India, and Pakistan, who are fighting on transboundary issues, water sharing, and dam constructions. This water crisis has become a staging point for the IFI, such as the Asian Development Bank and the World Bank and neoliberal governments in Asia, to promote and push privatization as the so-called best model that will solve the region's water crisis. For the last 10 to 15 years, we have been the guinea pigs and laboratories of privatization experiments. But these have miserably failed, and promises were not delivered. We saw in Metro Manila and Jakarta skyrocketing of prices, inefficient delivery, exacerbating unequal access to water and sanitation between the poor and the rich, and untransparent and accountable water systems. The promise that the private sector is better than the public sector is completely untrue. The impacts of the privatization and commercialization of water to communities and the poor have led the water justice movements in Asia to wage struggles against the privateers, the local and transnational water barons, and the water policies of Asian governments. Our struggles are struggles for human rights, for human dignity, for gender equity, and ultimately for democracy. Our struggles have brought about the emergence of alternatives such as public-public partnerships, communities reclaiming and taking control over their water, as well as the reversal of privatization and the establishment of democratically and publicly controlled and managed water systems. In the Philippines, for example, neighborhood associations in slum communities are laying down pipes and boring wells to provide water and sanitation facilities to their communities. In the Tamil Nadu state of India, they were able to transform a moribund and corrupt public water utility to one of the most efficient and functioning utilities in the region, and where public water engineers are working with and alongside communities. These positive models and good practices have to be supported and strengthened by state and public investments rather than outright support to privatization and commercialization. We demand and challenge our governments in Asia to say no to the IFI's conditionalities and drive for privatization and commercialization of water, particularly through free trade agreements, and to put a stop to risky dam constructions. Thank you.
Al Hassan Adam of Ghana is coordinator of the Africa Water Network. He spoke at the People's Water Forum about the growing trend of what are called management contracts, what he sees as backdoor water privatization schemes. Rather than sell the actual water rights to private companies, Adam says governments have been hiring private companies to manage their water. But the result, says Adam, is the same.
The privatization of water is hanging on the last straw. Earlier on, we've seen massive lease contracts for water. Most of them have failed, and there is a new design of management contracts. And the new design is also coming with a threat. The threat is the World Bank and other donors are using public water companies from the north to go around in the south, the developing countries, to privatize water through management contract, which they call service contracts, and sometimes say that they are not privatization. And I'm going to put one of such public companies, or two public companies, on the table today. A Dutch company called Vitens is moving around Africa, picking management contracts and saying that it's not privatization. And we want to put it on record clearly that management contracts are privatization. And if Vitens, which is a public company in Holland, want to be seen as a public company, it should stay away from management contracts. Vitens. And second, there is a bigger African company from South Africa, Run Water, who goes around partnering Vitens to do the management contract. So clearly, the goalpost of privatization is shifting from the traditional private corporations that we knew from Europe to European strong public utilities partnering other strong utilities in Africa and other developing countries to do privatization. And this is the danger the World Bank has realized. The whole package of privatization has failed. Now turn it on public institutions and use them for the purpose. So this is my submission, and we are making it clear the fight is going to continue. And we are not surprised that at the World Water Forum, the repression is stepping up, because they are losing the battle. And if a loser wants to survive, it can only survive with repression. That is the message they are sending to us, and we also have to fight back. We are not for reforms. We are for reclaiming the public space and reclaiming our public water. That's the message.
That was Al-Hassan Adam, coordinator of the Africa Water Network. We'll be right back. You're listening to Making Contact, a production of the National Radio Project. If you'd like more information or for CD copies of this program, please call 800-529-5736. You can also download programs or get our podcast at radioproject.org. And now we go to Winona Howder, Executive Director of Food and Water Watch. She was also at the People's Water Forum in Istanbul and helped bring out some of the international voices that we just heard. Thanks for being on our show, Winona.
Oh, I'm glad to be here.
Okay, so you've been following the privatization of water systems around the world for some time now. How have you seen the model of privatization change over the years?
Well, in the beginning, the private companies thought that they would be able to use public money in the global south from the large finance institutions, the World Bank, the Inter-American Development Bank, and others. These big privatizations that occurred around the world, because the international finance institutions forced the countries to privatize in order to get the money, failed. So we've had these large privatizations in places like Buenos Aires, Bolivia, Tanzania, Jakarta, all around the world, that have ended up being unable to provide water services to the poor. So now what we see happening is that they're moving into areas where they can get management contracts or they can buy systems cheaply and group them together. And in many places, this is in the United States, the companies don't want to have to spend their own money on investment. So they want to privatize in places where there's either public money available through one of the international finance institutions or in the global north in places like the U.S. And Canada, where water is cheap, people have money relatively, and where water is publicly provided. So you have all of the infrastructure and everything already paid for by public dollars, and these private companies want to step in and be able to profiteer.
So what does that actually mean then? So how are they getting their water?
Well, let's take Aqua America as an example. Aqua America is a company that's becoming one of the largest private water companies in the U.S. They are going into small communities, and especially in the South, and actually purchasing small companies and grouping them together. What they do then is hike up the water bills through a rapid fire rate increases and infrastructure surcharges. And then they continue to aggressively acquire these new systems in places with a high population growth and where there isn't a lot of competition and where there's little regulation. And then in places where they can't make a profit, they just cut and run. And they are also expanding into unregulated industries so that they can avoid public oversight of pricing. So in many cases, sewage systems aren't regulated, and so this is a place that they can make a big profit. We're also seeing another phenomena, which is the proposal of long-term leases of water systems in the global north. This was just defeated in Akron, Ohio, where the mayor wanted to lease the sewage facility, which was run very well by the city. He wanted to lease it to a private company, probably Veolia, for 99 years. And so the private company can basically make a lot of money because this is a system that's very well run and all of the investment has been made. And fortunately, the citizens of Akron, Ohio, voted in a referendum in November against this happening. We now see another big lease being proposed in places like Milwaukee. Now, in the global south, we still do see the World Bank promoting some privatization. Between 2000 and 2003, about 94% of World Bank loans forced privatization onto the companies, and 93% required cost recovery. And cost recovery is a fancy word for requiring the world's poor, people who make a dollar or two a day, to pay for their service connection. Now, our global water movement has been very successful in the last few years in bringing to light what the World Bank has been doing and the other investment institutions. We have embarrassed the bank, and the facts speak them for themselves. Privatization has been a failure in the developed world and the undeveloped world.
Well, what are the alternatives to privatization then that you can speak to?
The real alternatives are to, first of all, have a new development model. And we can look at some of the countries where privatization has failed. Let's look at, for instance, Ghana. Ghana is a very wealthy country. They have gold. They are one of the largest cocoa producers in the world. But the International Monetary Fund has gone in and required them to structure their economy in a way that the multinational corporations that are benefiting from these resources don't pay taxes. And so if they were to pay fair taxes, there would be enough money in Ghana to fix the water system and to have many of the services. So that's one answer, is we need to stop making countries' economies run for the benefit of these large multinationals that move around the world to where labor is cheapest and pull out the resources and don't leave the wealth within the country to be used for basic public services like water provision.
And how do you do that?
We can put pressure on the World Bank to use this money that they do loan to create public-public partnerships rather than public-private partnerships.
Yeah, that was my next question. What are public-public partnerships and why are they viable alternatives?
Well, often public utilities fail, number one, because there aren't the resources. So we need to get infusions of cash into these very poor places where the public services aren't being properly funded, and that gets to these issues about budget. But once there is some level of resources for the utility, then matching them up with a very well-run public utility that is in their region, if possible, can help transfer the skills and the technology that's necessary to have a very well-run public system. So we see this happening in Latin America a lot. For instance, Cochabamba is where one of the very famous failed privatizations occurred by a U.S. company, Bechtel. Once Bechtel was kicked out of the country because they had hiked the rates up so high, they were even charging people for the rainwater they saved. But then once they're gone, it's necessary to create a utility that serves the local population. So matching the local utility with expertise from other places in Latin America can help build both the expertise and the ability to improve the infrastructure.
So what did you bring back from the Water Forum? Did you accomplish, you know, what you had hoped?
What we think happened at the Water Forum is that we basically have the evidence that there is a complete bankruptcy of ideas from the companies, from the international finance institutions who are supposed to be figuring out how to bring water to the world's poor. For instance, there was no discussion at the forum of dealing with pollution. I mean, one of the major problems in providing water services is that water is so polluted, groundwater, that it's not potable. And so having a goal for service delivery without dealing with water pollution and toxics in our water and regulating toxics is just a bankrupt strategy. In sub-Saharan Africa, 80% of the major water privatization contracts have been terminated. In Latin America, all the high-profile privatizations have failed. And probably by the time of the next forum in 3 years, it won't even be necessary to have an alternative forum. We'll be having our own strategy sessions in a location of our choosing at a time of our choosing.
Winona Howder, Executive Director of Food and Water Watch, thank you so much for joining us.
It's been a real pleasure. Thanks so much.
That's it for this edition of Making Contact. For a CD copy of this program, call the National Radio Project at 800-529-5736, or you can get our podcast at radioproject.org. Thanks for listening to Making Contact.